This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
You may know you're listening to this show along the Marketing Podcast Network, but did you know there are other great shows on MPN to help your business? Christy Hyler hosts a fantastic podcast called Own It. Christy, tell us more about the show.
Own It is all about celebrating women and non-binary advertising agency owners. We talk about buying out of the Boys Club of Advertising because less than 1% of ad agencies are owned by women.
And where can people subscribe?
You can find the podcast at untilyouownit.com. We're also on the Marketing Podcast Network at marketingpodcast.net. And of course, you can subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You heard her. Go subscribe.
Hey, this is Jay Baer from Convince and Convert, author of the new book, Hug Your Haters. And one of the best ways to get your hands on this book and to see me speak is to register right now for Social Brand Forum 2016. Join me, Jenny Diedrich, Joe Palizzi, and more in Iowa City this fall. Register now at socialbrandforum.com.
Welcome to On Brand, a podcast for brand builders by brand builders. Here's your host, Nick Westergaard of Brand Driven Digital.
Hey, brand builders, have we got a show for you? Today's guest is Jenny Diedrich. Jenny is the founder and CEO of Arment Diedrich, a digital marketing communications firm based in Chicago. She is the author of Spin Sucks, co-author of Marketing in the Round, and co-host of Inside PR. She also is the lead blogger at Spin Sucks and is the founder of Spin Sucks Pro. Jenny, welcome to On Brand.
I'm kind of curious. You have like your whole podcast voice that's different from your normal voice.
I have a podcast voice that's different. Who is that guy? That's funny. It's just
couldn't even listen to my bio to make sure you got it correct because I was trying not to laugh at your podcast voice.
It's just, what if it was this other person that I like bring in and then quietly move them back into the corner? That's the pretend Nick.
Oh man, that was funny. Okay, I'm ready for your podcast now. Sorry.
Jenny is the CEO and founder of all things called Spin Sucks.
Yes.
There is not.
I just like to have that in there as many times as possible just so that I keep hearing people say, Spin Sucks, Spin Sucks, Spin Sucks.
You know what that is? That's on brand.
It's on message too. I just got you to deliver my message for me. Thank you.
You did. Well done there. Is there anything in the known universe that is Spin Sucks that is not you? And if so, we should send them a cease and desist.
Oh, trust me, there would be a cease and desist. There is not. No.
That is good. That is good. It's like, it's like the Mel Brooks movie Spaceballs when they get out the souvenirs or the gift shops up. Spaceballs, the flamethrower. And, look for Spin Sucks, the flamethrower, in a store near you sometime soon.
Brilliant. We have wine glasses. Now we'll have flamethrowers. I love it.
Wine glasses?
Yeah. I should bring you some when I see you.
I was going to say that should make the trip.
It will make the trip.
That was the other thing I could have, if I would have been more ad-libby on the Friday in which we're recording this, I could have spoken about the fact that you will be joining us once again for the Social Brand Forum here across the border in Iowa.
that I take a cab to the airport, get on a plane, fly there, take a cab to you, which is probably more time than it would be for me to just drive to you.
Yeah, that's always the one I struggle with, was when I come your way is, because I start adding up the, hour beforehand at the airport.
Right. And,
yeah.
Anyway. But yes, I'm looking forward to it. It's one of my favorite conferences. So, well, yay.
Thank you very much. And, speaking of being on brand, one tagline that I have used for the Social Brand Forum is actually one I ripped straight from a Jenny Diedrich testimonial in a previous iteration of kind of the forum promotional video, because you said, in expressing what you just said about the forum, you said that it brings all of these people to the heart of the heartland. And
wow, that sounds really smart of me. Are you sure I said that?
You did. Hey, I got video. So
wow.
At one point, you said that.
Wow, I must have had that scripted by somebody else.
Yeah, you script any of your ad-libbed comments. I mean, most of this we had to schedule far in advance so that you could send away all of my heavily prepared questions so that you could have your ad-lib ghostwriter plug in everything.
Yes. I'll tell you a quick story. At Content Marketing World, they had Hollywood Squares.
I saw the pictures.
Petrified about this, because not only are you in front of hundreds of people at, you know, answering questions, it's you have to be funny too. So they give you the questions ahead of time, which is nice. Most of us read the questions and were like, okay, but you don't know which question you're going to get asked, so it's not really easy to prepare. Unless you're Andrew Davis, who wrote down a funny comment for every single question, and there were like 60 questions. So at one point, I just went over and took his notes, and I was like, what was that question again? And I just looked for his ad-libbed, scripted answer.
Yeah, it's like he...
Every question he had written an answer for.
Holy cow. If he wrote them, because he may have sent them out to, you know, like a Hollywood script doctor, like Carrie Fisher.
I think he probably did.
Like Carrie Fisher or Bruce Valanche to do punch-up on his Content Marketing World snappy responses.
Yeah.
But you won't be spun, so you have to have those... Have those ready-made quips.
Correct.
that was my attempt at a segue. But, you know, as I was thinking about talking to you this AM, I thought about venturing into dicey waters with, you know, your angle on spin. And does it seem like you're talking about it more, less, the same in a political year? Or what about this political year? Is it different at all? It seems different. Maybe it's not. I don't know.
Now I get why you said dicey waters.
Dicey waters. You can be apolitical, perhaps, on it. I don't know. I sometimes have trouble, but.
You know, it is. I mean, yeah, political years, campaign years are always interesting fodder for stuff like this, because I always say that there are two industries that definitely spin. Politics is one, and Hollywood is the other. So now we've covered both.
We're done. We're done early. It's a six-minute episode of the podcast.
Should we talk about religion too, and then we've got it all covered?
Exactly. Yep. We'll grab the third rail, and then we'll just bail early on a Friday. I'm sorry, I interrupted with a quip, with an Andrew Davis brand quip.
Yes, right now it is definitely hard to watch because it's a wow. Although I do think there is one candidate who's not scripted or spinning the truth or using the block and bridge technique, which is, I'm glad you asked me that, but what I'm really here to talk about is this. There's one candidate who's not doing that. He has no filter. He is just out there saying whatever comes into his mind and that people cheer for. And the more they cheer, the worse he gets. So I would say that it's a different campaign year just because of from that perspective. He's definitely not spinning anything.
I presume you're talking about...
He who shall not be named. Don't say his name.
Oh, okay. We're not going to... What's the John Oliver thing? We're supposed to call him Drumpf?
Drumpf.
Yeah, I thought that was you know, it's David Meerman Scott, when he was on a couple of months ago, right between like Iowa and New Hampshire, so we'd both been getting out and seeing stuff, but he did a much better job just being the superior marketer. I just went just for, you know, like you go to the circus just to watch the fun acts. He got good marketing content out of it, and could write in a way that I would probably have trouble doing in as middle of the road way as he did. But he analyzed all of this, and it's funny because my mother-in-law is kind of glued to MSNBC. I think she's afraid that she'll miss something. As a result of it, you know, doesn't know it's the 24-hour news cycle. They're vamping.
Right.
But she always says to me, you need to write something about Drumpf. And I said, I have trouble. It feels... I mean, I don't want it to be successful, but I feel like it is case studyable, like you said, because it's like everybody that's doing all of the stuff that people like you and I, in terms of branding, messaging, would preach about, you know, kind of the icky stuff. It is the other kind of all of the filtered and the, you know, the response and everything else that you would traditionally do. And he's, you know, kind of, God forbid, doing what we might recommend, but I feel like he's using the powers for evil.
He is using the powers for evil. I think that's the difference, is you're right. A lot of the stuff we would recommend, except that I would hope that most of your listeners agree with this. It is evil. If he were using it for good, imagine what could be changed about this country.
Yeah, I mean, and that's the thing, because, you know, it's like, that's an odd thing in anyone in our business, is you try to not be political or polarizing, but with something like this, it's hard not to talk about it because it does relate to all of that. But I think it is hard because, man, I guess if I've lost a listener because of that, that's
you're okay with that.
I am okay with that. I'm willing to get that involved. But yeah, because you do talk. I mean, I would think especially with someone selling Spin Sucks the wine glass and Spin Sucks the flamethrower.
The flamethrowers, right?
That yeah, that's probably the, you know, kind of some of the bullet points of what's being done there. I mean, what are there teachable moments without descending into the pits of evil?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we were just talking about how earlier this week, which I don't know when you'll be actually airing this, but earlier this week of the week that we're recording, he talked about how women should be punished if they've had an abortion. And, you know, I am married to a liberal bleeding heart Democrat who works on campaigns. So, you know, having political conversations with him can sometimes be irritating and frustrating, but we were talking about, because we don't always agree, but we were talking about how he just appealed to a certain part of his base with that comment, because men and women agree with him that if the very worst thing on earth that you could do is have an abortion, and so they agree with that. And so he did appeal to that base, and whether or not you agree with the comment or whether or not you agree with him being that polarizing, he is definitely appealing to a part of his base. And those, I think, are the kinds of lessons that we can take away from it.
Well, and it also makes me think of the other mistake we make in business, in kind of spinning ourselves as brands, is kind of rounding out all of our sharp edges, you know, in this kind of desperate plea, especially as noisy as it is today, to be mm-hmm. everything to everyone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, that I think we're going to be an amazing 30 minutes. We're going to go the whole time and we're not going to say it. But and what if there's like one confused? I didn't know who they were talking about the whole time. Really alienated me. I couldn't follow. Exactly. Voldemort or Drumpf. But, you know, most of us, though, are desperate to, as noisy as it is, to kind of appeal to everyone. And, you know, we don't want to, put anyone off. But obviously, in this particular case, not afraid of that at all. You don't, I mean, because again, the teachable moment is, I don't think that brands have to be everything to everyone. You just have to make sure that your people are in your corner. Now, the bigger right. kind of contest side of that, it remains to be seen, is that a big enough army of people that can, like, move the country, which is the, I'm putting air quotes that no one can see around, interesting / horrifying thing for us to all see there.
I have, like, several thoughts from that rolling through my head. But, you know, my... when I got married, my mom said to me, because I was really upset that somebody had said something about something we had, some decision we had made. They didn't like the band. I can't even remember now. It's been that long. But she said, you're not going to make everyone happy, so just do it the way you want to do. And that's sort of the philosophy I've taken through. And I think it applies to business for sure, which is you're not going to make everyone happy. And that's okay, because imagine if you're trying to be all things to all people and you say, oh, sure, we can take on this client because we like their product or we like their service or we like their mission, or, you know, something about it is appealing. But we also know deep down that they're probably not the right target or the right prospect for us. It ends up costing you more time and angst and resources and everything else, patience, everything else in the long run, because they're not the right fit for you, because you were trying to be all things to all people. So you have to. You know, that's why they say find a niche and stick with it when you're starting a business, because that's what's going to be the driver of scale and of growth. If you're trying to do all things, you sort of become the master of the, what is it? What's the,
when you're this? All things to, you're, what, nothing to, now I can't finish
something,
it.
How yeah, does that shoot. Go?
Something.
Something and master of none, whatever.
Well, yeah, I mean, your thought on that, it stumped me on mine. I had something else and I, about finding the niche. Oh, well, it made me think, you know, it's interesting kind of the intersection of politics with all this. So I feel like when I'm talking about branding, positioning, differentiating, I borrow a term from the political arena a lot, because when you are master of none, I always, you know, think about the terms and I think about the lineup that Drumpf has cycled through. But what you end up otherwise is as an also-ran. You know, someone right. that kind of just is an average-looking, average-talking person in a suit. And, you know, I mean, I think that's the danger. I think.
And it's not exciting. Who wants to work with that?
Yeah, I mean, well, and you talk about working for, I think it impacts, I mean, that's why I think being an interesting brand that stands for something, that isn't spinning, kind of covering both of our brands there, you know, affects everything. It affects your customers, it affects the people that work for you. And I mean, I also think, you know, again, Drumpf is an extreme case study, but I think any good brand worth something also has something that they're very clearly not. Also, you know, you have an, if you really stand for something, there's also a counterpoint, there's an antithesis.
Right. Right. Actually, it's funny you bring that up, because I want to say it's the very first chapter of Spin Sucks, the book, talks about that and how you want to create your company story based on the way a fiction novel would be written, and not that you're going to create fiction or anything like that, but that you take sort of the whole idea of an enemy or an antithesis, and you have a hero, and you have, you know, the storyline, you have all of that as part of your company story. And sure, you do definitely have enemies or, you know, of your company. So one of the examples I use is that Basecamp, when they launched, their quote-unquote enemy was the big companies that have enterprise-level project management software that isn't available to, or wasn't at the time, available to small, medium-sized businesses. So that was their enemy. They didn't choose a company per se. They just said, the industry that only focuses at the enterprise level, that's our enemy. So you know, you have to kind of figure that out. And when you take a stance like that, that's what people gravitate to. So, you know, they either love you or hate you. And if they hate you, then they're not going to do business with you. And you've sort of disqualified them without ever having to have a conversation with them.
Yeah. No, I love the Basecamp's a great example on branding and who they are and what they stand for. And even rebranding, too. I mean, I think that, you know, it took a lot of courage over the past year, I guess, to kind of position from, you know, being 37 Signals to Basecamp the brand also.
Right.
I think, you know, story is one of those things that I think a lot of people nod along with, and they think, yeah, story stuff's good, but they can't kind of get past, I think, you know, too many of us know enough to be dangerous about story, but don't know, you know, some of those really critical elements that you need, you know, following the hero's journey, that you need to stand for something, that, you know, there's also, you know, without getting totally expository, some reason why you came into being. And, you know, to stay on the base camp example, you know, that's, I mean, as I recall their creation story, you know, it was to solve a problem that they had, that there wasn't anything that their team could use. You know, starting, I believe, is an agency not unlike the ones that you and I have.
Yep. Yeah, I think you're right. And, you know, I have a really good friend who in the PR industry had the same thing. She ran an agency and they were trying to figure out how to show results to clients differently, and there wasn't anything out there. And so they created something internally to start to show clients their results and discovered that it had more applications. So she actually shut her agency down and now is focused on Iris, which helps PR firms figure out how to show results to clients that actually matter.
Well, it's such an interesting, you know, learning to nurture those moments too. My son's in high school and is doing more and more writing. And even he, like just this last week, I forget what he was reading about, but it was some, you know, a movie or something about a creator making something and ultimately deciding to make what they wanted. And I kind of gave him a big, yes, that's absolutely a huge lesson. Don't lose sight of that. Cause
yes,
I think
yes.
We get that ironed and starched out of us, in the real world of forgetting about the stuff that appeals to us.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, everybody talks about, you know, if you find your passion and you're doing what you love, then it's not really work. And it's true, because if it does appeal to you, you do pursue it and you are passionate about it. And even when you're exhausted, you want to keep going.
Well, that makes me think of, saw the founder and CEO of BarkBox speaking a couple of weeks ago. And he talked about just that and you know, kind of all of the kind of tying together all of these points. They, you know, in appealing to their audience of dog parents, had a, you know, some fun memes that they were putting out, talking to people that know and love dogs. I would be one of them. But they send out, I think we're going to talk about all of the taboo topics, because with something like Hump Day, you can imagine if a brand with a sense of humor like BarkBox, what they're sending out on Hump Day. And it's dogs humping.
It doesn't even have to be another dog. It can be a stuffed animal or a couch someone's leg or
and like photobombing good pictures of dogs in the background with that. And you know, they talked about, you know, having some concern over what if, you know, someone, and it's that point that we've kind of been making the whole time, that it's if someone, you know, that we can't be all things to all people. And if someone doesn't like that, then there's probably other aspects of our brand's personality that they're not going to like anyways, but that's who we are.
And that's okay. That's fine. I'd rather people disqualify themselves than for me to try to put messaging out there that sort of appeals to everybody, that's generic and vanilla. And then I have somebody call and say, we're interested in talking to you. And then I spend 3 weeks, you know, in coffee meetings and dinner and this and that. And then we put together a proposal that's beautiful and we've spent all this time and resources. And then they decide that we're not the right fit. I'd much rather save all of that time and just have them disqualify themselves up front because they don't like our stance, our vision, whatever it happens to be. I'd much rather that happen.
Well, I love that too. And then you don't have to be a vanilla brand too. I love that
because
I think too many of us do get stuck being vanilla brands. Why do you think that, I mean, all of this to me makes a ton of sense, but it does see, and then I, you know, you talk about, you know, my son in high school, and then the ironing out of all of this stuff. Why does the other option seem like the right option? It seems like because I know I spend a lot of time making this point. I mean, we're talking about it with our own businesses and agreeing with BarkBox, but even in working with clients, it seems like, you know, there is that tendency to not want to rock the boat and to be everything to everyone. Why does safety and vanilla prevail?
My theory on it is that that's the way business has always been done, and the digital web blew that up. And so right now, the majority of people who run organizations are still of the old guard. And you have new blood coming in, certainly, and, you know, millennials and Gen Xers certainly are taking over and all those kinds of things. But I would say the majority are still run by old white guys. And that's the way stuff has always been done. So to, you know, ask them, even though they want the results and they see the results you've had in other things, or you've shown them case studies and it's really appealing to them, it's such a large change and it's so uncomfortable that that's why they fight it, because humans don't like change in general. But then you're asking them to take everything that they've done in business for 40 years or longer and blow it up. And that's really uncomfortable.
Well, and that digital explosion is kind of an interesting point on the timeline too, because I think that it's easy for maybe you and I to see, because it's blown up, you have to find a pocket and drill right down there. As opposed to that explosion that, you know, they kind of sometimes see it as this increased mass, this increased reach that we have to then appeal, use the reach of digital to appeal to kind of everyone under the sun, this kind of impossible mission.
Yes. This, yeah. I'm only laughing because we're having an experience like that right now, and it's not fun.
Oh, too close to. Well, I think that it because it's the same. It's seeing the same issue. This digital lightning bolt in the comfortable media timeline. Two different ways, because I think that for all of the reasons, demographics, experience, yep. Everything else, it is. It feels safer. I mean, talking to less people doesn't sound like what people like you and I are supposed to be recommending. We're supposed to be in the business of bringing them reach and all of the eyeballs.
But I mean, we could go down this path too, for sure. But as you well know, bringing on the eyeballs and the reach is not what drives business.
Yeah. Yeah, it well, especially today, because yeah, it's like, you know, you're a mile wide and an inch deep.
Right.
So, what are the other things that you think are some of the that it seems like we're kind of charged with myth busting these days? You know, what are some of the other big ugly monsters in boardrooms out there that we're not talking about people, talking about issues? No one's a monster.
How much time do you have? Oh, my gosh. There's no such thing as overnight success. There is no magic bullet. Social media is not going to get you sales overnight. You're still building relationships with human beings, so sending a pitch to 1,000 people that's exactly the same isn't going to work. It does take time. There's so many. I could go on and on and on. I actually should just keep a list on my desk of things that people say. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny. You talk about pitching and it's like, you know, the emails that, you know, we all get are just, and as someone that is a huge advocate for email marketing, still having a very important role.
Yep.
I kind of unearthed a line in one of my, in a recent talk I was giving about email. And it's that it's still so important, but so many marketers are ruining it. I mean, I don't want to make everything about Drumpf, but it's like the good tactics, the smart, unfiltered saying what he feels, the good tactics that he's using for evil. I feel like some of us are doing the same thing with email marketing. Mm-hmm. I was just looking at some that it's like it's this, it was this. This pitch that I keep getting, and they keep, like, en masse. No, I know I'm being really annoying. And it's like, stop it. This is to everyone.
Then stop doing it.
Yeah, it's like you've written a mass email on the pretext that you're really annoying. How right. we've entered a new level of irony here.
Or my favorite one is, I'm just resending this to you so I get to the top of my your inbox.
Yeah.
Stop that. Don't do that.
That thing. If there's one thing. Yeah. Well, and you know, that, you know, is kind of a good segue that I run with, because I, as we start to wind down, before I get to the brands that have made you smile, because I know that you're someone that whose answer to this I can't wait to hear. But I also want to hear, you know, if you have, you know, we've talked about all the things, don't do that. You know, if there is one point that you get to make to someone, what is the one thing that you would tell someone today that is building a brand and sharing a message on behalf of that brand? Is there?
We've touched a little bit on it, I think, which is, you know, don't be afraid to inject humor. Don't be afraid to be human. Don't be afraid to inject sort of that personal piece side of things. I think people just are too scared to, you know, it's the whole, well, nobody cares what I'm having for lunch. Well, maybe they don't care what you have for lunch, but they do care, you know, that you in your free time are teaching water aerobics to seniors, or that you have five kids that range from
three to 15.
Three, dang!
You were close.
I was so close.
It's the kid test. It's another important hurdle here on the On Brand podcast.
But people care about that kind of stuff. So don't be afraid to inject that. You know, that's what humanizes a brand, and that's what humanizes a company. I love the BarkBox example because, yeah, they probably did make some people unhappy or whatever. But come on. Life's too short to be that freaking serious. Jeez Louise.
I that is a great way to put it. And speaking of being serious and perhaps not so much, what is a brand that has made you smile recently?
Well, I'm a huge cyclist. And for Christmas, I received the Peloton bicycle, which is half spin bike, half bike on your trainer, half spin classes. That's more than one full half. But
What's it called?
The Peloton bike.
Oh.
It's freaking amazing. But what I like about it is, well, two things. Number one, they started on Kickstarter, and it was this whole idea that they could take pro cycling training and bring it into people's homes.
Yeah.
So it's a little scary for, you know, especially if you don't ride your bike often. It's very, very scary, and it's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, and I ride my bike every day. But that was the whole idea of it, and now they've created these bikes that you can have in your home. They have live streaming and so that you can actually join the class, and there's a camera on the screen so that it's like you're in the class. They do on demand, and then they have studios in New York and Chicago. So it's but from that perspective, just from a passion, it's great for me, especially because I'm in Chicago and I can't ride my bike outside all year. But they've started doing things where they've brought in former pro cyclists. So if you're into the Tour de France, you will recognize these names. George Hincapie and Christian Vandeveld are the current pro cyclists in residence right now. So you get to take these classes from these guys who actually have ridden the Tour, and it's freaking amazing. And they've got everybody on Facebook, and they do blogging, and they've just done a partnership with Strava. So everything's just sort of interconnected with your whole life. And I'm really, really in love with all of it right now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love all of the different points too, in the in-home and the in and,
right.
and classes too, because I think all of those different touch points are probably key smile drivers.
Very key smile drivers.
That's a highly technical term in the
yes.
industry lingo, a smile driver.
Smile drivers.
Jeez. Speaking of being human, good Lord. We try to plant five smile drivers throughout the experience.
I'm going to have to figure out a way to incorporate that in my speech when I see it.
Smile drivers. One thing, if you take one thing away from this talk, I want you all to not forget about the smile drivers. Oh, speaking of smile drivers, where you can find many of them is where Jenny is going to tell us next where we can find her online.
SpinSucks.com.
SpinSucks.com. Everything, including everything the wine glasses there. And the flamethrowers.
Jenny. Well, I have to do the flamethrowers. So don't, let's set expectations. I have to get them made first.
I was going to say it does. Yeah, the flamethrower business, the markets, you know, the whole, all of all the supply chain on flamethrowers is not what it used to be.
No, it's not. I'm going to have it. Yeah. Might be a little bit of a challenge, but I will do it.
Awesome. Okay, well, we will link up to everything that you talked about. The Peloton bike, Spin Sucks, flamethrower coming soon. Kidding aside, there is very good stuff at Spin Sucks. On our show notes, which you can find at branddrivendigital.com. Jenny, thanks for joining us on Brand.
Thanks for having me. That was fun.
All right. And last but not least, you can find links to everything that we talked about, as noted, over at Brand Driven Digital. You can subscribe to the show via iTunes, Stitcher, and RSS. Speaking of iTunes, if you like what you're hearing, head over there, give us a quick rating and review, help others find the show. Remember, On Brand is brought to you by my new book, Get Scrappy, Smarter Digital Marketing for Businesses Big and Small. Pre-order now for the best price and digital extras at GetScrappyBook.com. And finally, On Brand is also brought to you by the Social Brand Forum. This premier digital marketing experience takes place September 22nd and 23rd in beautiful Iowa City, Iowa. Learn from experts like Jenny, who's going to be telling us all about the smile drivers and how you can use them in your business, as well as Jay Bear, Joe Polizzi, and many others right here in the heart of the heartland, TM. Jenny Dietrich. Listeners of the show get the best rate when they register using promo code ONBRAND at socialbrandforum.com. Until next week, I'm Nick Westergaard, and I'll see you on the internet.
This has been the On Brand Podcast, presented by Brand Driven Digital. For show notes, links, and more, go to onbrandpodcast.com. Remember, you can subscribe to the show and leave a rating and review at iTunes and Stitcher. Thanks for listening.
This podcast is heard along the Marketing Podcast Network. For more great marketing podcasts, visit marketingpodcasts.net.